Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to discover all of our previous episodes. You can also follow us on Twitter at Irish_TechNews and on Facebook at facebook.com/IrishTechNews. Thanks and enjoy the listening.
Okay, so today on the podcast, we have somebody who I thought would be a very good person to speak to because they have moved into the clean tech, green tech space and tech for good and are doing a lot of interesting things. And he's been on an interesting journey to reach this point. So look, first of all, who do I have the pleasure of speaking to?
This is Adam Ryan. It's great to be here today, Simon.
Cool. And for those who haven't come across you, if you had to give an elevator pitch of who you are and what you do, how would you kind of characterize what you do and what you're working on?
Sure. I'm here in Boston, Massachusetts. I've been working on clean tech and tech for good for the past decade. And the latest venture I'm helped co-found is called CapShift. And we've built a tech-enabled platform to help unlock over $1 trillion of charitable assets to help donors invest in leading impact-focused funds and ventures, going well beyond traditional grant making to bring massive new amounts of capital to help do good and earn financial returns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, I mean, and potentially tech for good can be a win-win concept, you know, like some people make on a return, but equally you could be making return and helping the planet. How hard or easy a pitch is that for you when you speak to potential investors? And is it getting easier to make this pitch or is it still a tough sell?
I think that there's two types of, philanthropic donors we might work with, or two sides of their brain. One is they're looking at, I'd park some money to give away one day and that I want to invest it and grow it over time. And I might not have thought very much of how I've invested it. It might be sitting in oil and gas companies or tobacco companies. And if you have options that I can make similar returns while also backing companies that treat their workers well or are investing in sustainable technology, well, that sounds like a real win. I think the other half of the brain is saying, well, I give grants away every year. And maybe the nonprofit support, there might be a more catalytic way to support them by giving them capital that they can use to invest in revenue generating projects and then return to me if they're successful. And so I get a multiplier effect with my philanthropy. And so I think both of these trends are catching on, the investment capital pool is much bigger. But we think that charitable assets are unique because, they're already committed to be given away one day. And so the families that control them are already primed to want to do more good with them.
Yeah. There have been some recent books that have looked at reimagining capitalism and having values and ethics hard baked into what you do. Do they have any degree of conditionality on what you do with the money? And what I mean is are they expecting a certain return by a certain date? Or does it vary depending on which trust and which fund you're working with?
Yeah, it's a real spectrum of opportunities. And so we run a tech-enabled platform. You can think of it more like an AngelList or a Kiva or other, transaction-based platforms. And so we see, a subset of opportunities that are led by maybe leading financial firms, like a Prudential or others. And there people are really looking for rigorous diligence and financial returns, and they're comparing it to other financial options. But we also work with leading nonprofits like Habitat for Humanity or UNICEF USA, whose products, I think, are being compared to other grant options. And there, what's really important is, why would I want to, invest in a nonprofit fund as opposed to giving a grant to the nonprofit? And, people are attracted by the idea of being catalytic or getting more impact for every charitable dollar they have. And that story is increasingly resonates with folks.
And so we recently interviewed Helena Lee, who's an impact investor, and we put this question to her because again, in the Reimagining Capitalism book, there was a discussion about does impact investing have an effect, and how can we assess what the impact of impacting investing is? How do you reassure or answer people in terms of assessing if there really is an impact?
Yeah, we look at it as tiers. So I think the helpful way is to split it between public markets, private markets, and then maybe a third category of around funding nonprofits. In public markets, you know, there's been a lot of attention in the ESG sector about, you know, are you really having impact? It's certainly the hardest to have a cause and effect impact. We tend to focus on values alignment first, and we look a lot at funds who are having impact by way of shareholder advocacy or activism, as well as being part of a bigger movement. I think in the private and nonprofit world, the cause and effect is much clearer. So if you're investing in a venture capital fund that's backing transformational health or education or climate startups, or if you're helping provide capital to a nonprofit to build a new health facility or to provide, you know, life-saving vaccines months ahead of when they could have otherwise, then I think it's a lot easier to make that cause and effect or additionality argument about how your dollars are really making change in the world.
Okay, yeah, I mean, and when we were chatting with you to prepare the interview, one of the areas that you mentioned was impact investing in climate resiliency. So, I mean, on one hand, that sounds like a very big area to attempt to have an impact on. So, but you feel there are emerging opportunities. So, I guess is that to create more renewable energy, or what is climate resiliency, and how can we have an impact on that in a quick and effective way?
Yeah, you can think about the two approaches to climate change. One is around mitigation. How do we stop the carbon pollution going into the air? And the second is resiliency. How do we invest in systems that limit the damage of a more volatile climate, whether that's disasters or droughts or other effects that it can have? So whereas the investment in mitigation is very focused on the energy system and the agriculture system, investing in resiliency can spread much more broadly through the economy. And so there's one fund on our platform that's specifically focused on climate resiliency, and you can see a broad array of investments they might make. So one might be better data around supply chains. How do we help companies adapt when there's extreme weather that it hurts the economy and businesses less strongly? A second might be tools to help communities adapt to fluctuations in stormwater or extreme hurricanes. How do you make homes stronger? And a third example may even be, how do we make farming more resilient by moving certain types of farming indoors inside greenhouses or warehouses where you can control and protect against climate and weather? And so I think climate resiliency is an exciting area where we've seen a lot less dollars from the private sector or charitable sector flowing in. And I think that's going to be a big trend in the next 5 years.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I guess from that, you make me think of another area where we're seeing a lot of activity, which is regenerative farming and hemp for being used for building for more ecological buildings and things. So is regenerative farming part of the portfolio of projects you're looking at as well?
Yes, we really try to cover all the sustainable development goals, and you know, our job is to find companies and funds and nonprofits that have investable opportunities, you know, across all these key themes. Regenerative agriculture is another growing trend of interest among the families we work with. And just note that, you know, our platform plugs into large financial institutions that help manage charitable assets. So we particularly work with institutions that manage donor-advised funds. which are very popular in the US and are increasingly growing around the world, like the UK and Canada and Australia, as to make it easier for families to get some sort of tax break around their philanthropy, and then manage those dollars in terms of future investing and grant making. And so when we bring our platform to institutions for regenerative agriculture, we might look for two or three areas. One would be some families are interested in actually investing in helping farms adopt these practices. And so there's a growing set of agricultural funds that give loans to farmers or actually invest in farmland and say, as opposed to just, you know, maybe using less water or using less fertilizer, how can we invest in the practices such as cover crops or the crop rotations or the type of natural pesticides we use that actually enhance the ability of soil to improve its ability to absorb carbon over time and strengthen the biodiversity and ecosystem you see around that farm. I think a second example would be investing in new technologies that do the same thing. And so these are the, I think, a very popular trend where you've seen maybe the past decade a lot of focus on sustainable agriculture, but now most new products are very much orienting around regenerative agriculture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, I mean, and I find that it's like when you pull one piece of wool from the bull, you end up learning about other things. And so with Greentown Labs, but what happened was quite quickly you had a number of co-founders because you had a number of different projects that all came together. So I guess the question would be is that do you find that whatever point you come in at, you end up seeing complementary technologies and complementary opportunities?
Yeah, you know, Greentown Labs was a great example of bottoms-up innovation. You know, about a decade ago, I helped start a company coming out of grad school, and we noted that there was a new wave of entrepreneurs in the U.S. or globally who wanted to, you know, work and be around other startups that were very focused on clean technology. And we started with four or five startups, and now it's the largest incubator in North America for clean technology with about 80 startups. And yeah, we did note that there is this complementary aspect where one company might be focused on renewable energy, another might be focused on sustainable food, a third might be looking at the water ecosystem. But you see, a large number of overlaps where kind of similar engineering talent wants to look at all these interrelated systems. You have similar customers, particularly in the industrial world, where the energy, food, water, and other kind of economic systems have a lot of overlap. And then, you know, similar investors care about all three sectors. So we definitely see that this clustering effect was really powerful.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it can then drive, you know, like you stand on the shoulders of others and it raises the level of what everyone is aware of and what you can do. So I think it has a great potential for positivity. So the last 12 months have been challenging and difficult and different. Has it made you guys change the way that you work, or was it business as usual? How's the last year been for you?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, on the personal level, we paid a lot of attention to how our team can adapt to a virtual environment, making sure they're healthy, just like every other company. But in terms of our business model, there's probably been two big changes. One is, we uniquely focused on institutions that manage charitable dollars, like family foundations and donor advised funds is our core audience. And in this year of crisis, you've actually seen a lot more activity where maybe historically someone may say, this is not the year I am paying attention to my philanthropy. In 2020, every family that, you know, we knew was paying attention to their philanthropy and creating an urgency to think, how can I do more for my community or do more for the issues I care about? So I'd say that kind of increased the pace of engagement. The second factor is that we tried to be very topical in trying to focus on a few research reports and sourcing opportunities tied to the issues that are top of mind for the families we work with. So In April, we started looking closely at the new funds helping with COVID-19 response, ranging from health innovation funds to loans to small businesses and nonprofits that all of a sudden were starved of revenue. And that was really compelling. And then in the second half of the year, we also looked closely at the issue of racial justice, which became top of mind for many of our clients, particularly in the United States. And there was a growing wave of funds looking at how do we help solve this problem by tapping investment dollars. And oftentimes we find that that's the gap where there's, if you think about things like the SDG gap or, big ways to move money for change, there tends to be a lot of well-known opportunities in public markets, a lot of great nonprofits to grant to. And we always found there was a big gap around looking at private funds, social enterprises, nonprofit funds. How do we sort through this diverse landscape and bring the best opportunities to light?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And look, and in some ways, we are seeing many new and exciting possibilities. The price of renewables is falling. The amount of energy generated by renewables is growing. So are you optimistic looking into 2021 and beyond that? I guess with Bill Gates, they decided, where could we have the best bang for our dollar to have the biggest impact and save the most lives? And they do seem to, I feel they've had an effect. Are you optimistic about the investments that you're encouraging your guys to make? Because obviously, leading into 2019 and 2020, climate change was a massive issue, still is a massive issue, but had got pushed to the back a little bit. So are you optimistic that these kind of investment initiatives can actually help to deal with the climate issues we're facing?
Yeah, it's not one silver bullet. And we do think there's a renewed focus on climate with a change of administration in the United States and mm-hmm. Other topics, maybe vaccines coming out and things of that nature. And a big principle of ours is to meet every individual family where they are. Some people are very, you mentioned the Gates Foundation, kind of take a very analytical approach and saying, how can I, use each dollar to create the most change? But a lot of people, it's more emotional. And they may say, look, I care a lot just about my community, or maybe because I work in healthcare, I only care about access to healthcare. Or because a family member, had an illness, I care about that illness. And so mm-hmm. we don't judge about what someone cares about. What we say is, traditionally, this idea of just thinking of focusing on 5% of your philanthropic assets and that you're going to give away might be limiting your ability to make change. And thinking about the other 95% that may be sitting in some investment account somewhere, how can we leverage that 95% to help you achieve the goals you care about, both in terms of change in the world as well as your financial goals? And I think that's where we see this growing opportunity.
Yeah, look, I hope so too. So as we talk about this, another area where a large amount of investment is going into is crypto, Bitcoin, and Ether. So, just as that's a very topical thing, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think it's bubbling again? We're seeing a lot of institutional investment moving into that. At the same time, maybe it's just up and down roller coaster speculation. Is that a distraction for you guys, or what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think as it impacts us in maybe two big ways. One is we've seen this interesting phenomenon of maybe a new generation of Bitcoin millionaires kind of diving into philanthropy. You've started to see these donor advised funds now taking crypto donations. And, as opposed to maybe the old generation of philanthropists, this is a community that's tech first, global in nature, highly analytical, and kind of don't have the old set of rules. And so I think what we are excited to is to help bring kind of structure and thoughtfulness to this new wave of philanthropists. And that's true beyond crypto, where you kind of see the giant wealth transfer to millennials who may have similar qualities of thinking about philanthropy in more of a 21st century model when we're trying to help spearhead that movement. I think the other factor around crypto is that beyond the currencies, you know, you're starting to see the spread of blockchain as a tool into many of the same, you know, social issues and sustainable development goals we care about. So we're seeing more and more of the underlying companies and social enterprises integrating blockchain into part of their tech for good solution. You know, one example might be around food safety. And so you see, okay, there's a new blockchain solution about how do we track where is the food sourced from? You know, how is it instantly identified during a recall? How do we know that it isn't out of its temperature spec along the supply chain, and creating that maybe data architecture? And I think that's going to be, you know, what is the bigger fueling beyond just the currency aspect in the future.
Yeah, look, I mean, very much so. I mean, there's an Irish company that is working with the UN to do secure food deliveries using blockchain. And then, as we were chatting before, the Vanuatu with Oxfam to reach the unbanked. So, yeah, I think so. Below, away from the froth and the noise of whatever the price of Bitcoin is, blockchain has the potential to deliver some very good solutions for sustainable strategies. So I think I would agree with your answer, and I think it's well explained. Who and where do you get your inspiration from? Where are you getting your ideas and your motivation from? Are they traditional sources or what is it?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, this whole field of impact investing, that even that phrase was only coined in 2007. And so prior to that, it was, you know, the Muhammad Yunus and the microfinance movement that was the early inspiration, or maybe even some companies that started to look at how do they integrate social values and philanthropy into their corporate business model. I think today the inspiration comes much more broadly, you know, and a big thing for us is to think about the motivations of individuals. So you can think broadly that, you know, a large portion of wealth in this world is controlled by institutions like pension funds and insurance companies. And we're very focused on the other half, which is ultimately controlled by individuals and families. And there it's different because a lot of the psychological and emotional motivators are what's important. You know, why does someone want to do philanthropy? How do they think about investing their philanthropic dollars? You know, what leads them to want to decide to invest in an oil and gas company versus a renewable energy project, and what's that benefit? So we take a very, when we think of a tech-enabled platform, actually get a lot of our insights from the behavioral psychologists and other tech-enabled platforms out there that have nothing to do with impact investing. And just the broader movement of philanthropy is what inspires us and what we try to learn from in terms of how we engage our clients.
Yeah, look, I mean, and see, and for us in Europe, I mean, in some ways, active and aggressive philanthropy in the US is actually a very positive thing that has happened. I mean, because in Ireland, for example, we have libraries all over the country from 100 years ago that were built by Carnegie, you know. So therefore, for all the spotlight on the US at the moment, the US has done a lot of things that were very positive and have set very good examples in philanthropy specifically, in terms of, you know, people's goals to give away as much of the money that they made to put it back out there. So I think that is interesting and positive. It's been go on.
Well, I was just going to highlight one example that might touch on that, which is oftentimes we think of, you know, government controlled or institutional controlled dollars might be bigger checks, but more limited in what they fund. And, you know, we have the opportunity through our platform to look at over 1,000 different opportunities to give each individual user the chance to find something that's very specifically aligned with what they care about. And it allows for more experimentation. And one example is Kiva, which is a well-known nonprofit around microlending. You know, they decided to launch their first impact fund around how do you lend money to refugees? Refugees, historically, it's been very hard to get institutions to lend to refugees because they don't own any assets. They don't own any land. They don't have any track record of repaying. They're new to the country. They might leave the country. And Kiva said, you know, we think there's a bet that refugees, although they have those risks, actually have the types of personalities and characteristics and determination that will make them more likely to repay and make up for that. And so we helped bring some capital into their first refugee focused fund, and it was charitable capital that was really looking at experimenting. And if the data shows, we're hoping to see $30 million turn into $200 million to turn into billions of dollars from larger institutions. And we're really excited about seeing lots of experiments like that happen all over the world.
I think that's a very positive example. And again, one of the interviews we conducted similarly was saying that traditionally, people of color, women of color, and women have found it harder to raise funds from VCs. And yet, actually, the returns that you get from investing with that focus are often much higher. And similarly with refugees, in some ways, you can see that they're going to be more motivated to pay it back. And so I guess I know you guys have looked at that. And how do you factor in, encourage and support investment into, minority founders and people of diversity?
Yeah, it's something that's important in the work we do. And I encourage everyone to go to capshift.com, and you can check out on the homepage the racial justice work we've done. When we worked with a partner of the Case Made to look more deeply at the issue of racial equity and racial justice and diversity and how it intersects investment. And we said what we found is that there's actually three layers of depth that you can go into. And so I think the first layer that you just mentioned is really looking at diversity and inclusion and how are the businesses that I'm funding, integrating people of color or minorities into leadership positions or ownership positions within those ventures. I think the second was really around racial equity, and that's going beyond diversity. How are the dollars that you're funding actually flowing into communities to provide opportunities around housing or health or education to try to level the playing field for the individuals in the community, not just, maybe the venture capitalist manager. And the third layer, which is probably the most exciting, is really more systemic racial justice, which is not just how are dollars flowing into communities, but there's a new wave of funds that are actually trying to flip the governance and power dynamics of the decision-making itself to integrate more beneficiaries and community members into the capital allocation decision making. These are small and emerging, and there's not a ton of dollars, but you can start to see kind of much bigger scale thinking about how to achieve racial equity and racial justice through capital markets and investments.
Yeah, and I guess as you are saying, there is that both it's the right thing to do, but there are strong business reasons why it's a smart thing to do as well. You mentioned it briefly, but how can people find out more about you guys and you and what you do and your work?
Yeah, the easiest to go to capshift.com. We're working with about half of the major donor advised fund providers in the US and a growing set of family foundations and family offices and wealth advisors. So we have a lot of ways to get our platform out into the hands of folks interested and looking for more opportunities. We're focused on the US, but are also looking at expanding more broadly. And so are happy to talk to folks who are looking outside the US. Please reach out to us through the website. And we have some great data and reports as well that folks can find.
Awesome. So thanks very much for taking the time to chat with us for the podcast.
Thanks, Simon. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. You can sign up for more via our email digest, which does a weekly summary of all our podcasts, or you can follow us on your preferred podcasting platform of choice, or follow us on Twitter, Irish_Tech News, or Facebook, or LinkedIn, or the website irishtechnews.ie. We will bring you more soon, and thanks for listening.